in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a discussion of the descendants of Swayambhuvamanu. Now, Swayambhuvamanu had two sons. The elder was named Priyavrata, and the younger one is named Uttana. The descendants of Priyavrata, who Priyavrata didn't wish to become the king, rather he liked to perform austerities and take the spiritual life. He didn't want to get entangled in keeping work the cross of, anyway, it's explained in the fifth canto. His descendants are explained in himself. His story, wonderful, wonderful pastime that Priyavrata described in the first chapter of the fifth canto. But here, in the fourth chapter, the sons, the descendants of the fourth canto, the descendants of the younger son, his name was Uttana, are described. And especially, or specifically, Maitreya Muni, who is speaking here, he wished to describe the descendants of Uttanapad, because in that family, the great devotee Yuga Maharaj was born. And he was very, of course, everyone was very young. And he took his devotional service in such an incredible way that he was just perhaps 5 years old. He reached perfection so quickly. Let us hear something about Yuga Maharaj. Now, the pastime begins, practically speaking, in the eighth chapter, where it describes in the eighth verse, Jaye Uttanabhadasya Suniti Srichitayor Suruchi Prayasi Patyor. King Uttanabhad had two wives, Suruchi and Suniti. And this one was the favorite. Suruchi Prayasi, she was dear to Uttanabhad, the Pachi. And Nekara Yatsito Dhruva, and not the other wife, she, Suniti, wasn't dear to King Uttanapad, and that Suniti had a son whose name was Dhruva. Now, this first set of verses that we're going to read, this morning's verses, will more or less set the scene for a very powerful boy, as we said, to achieve his perfection. A powerful devotee. No one can do this without having very deep purva sanskaras, deep spiritual impressions from previous lives. When we think about where we were born, what our tendencies were when we were even younger, or what they are now, these tendencies, every one of them, the tendencies, this is called Kama Vasana, they are like seeds of consciousness that we are born with. Adhisthayam manasthayam visha upasevate. We have tendencies that we are born with. And these little children, they all look the same, and they all are so innocent. But as they grow, they begin to manifest who they actually are. The seeds, when you throw so many seeds in the ground, it is hard to tell the rose from the marigold from the weed. But after a while, we should be able to tell the roses, the ones with the thorns and the pigeons, and the marigolds are the ones that when you pull the flowers out, they pop. And the weeds are the ones that are growing everywhere. And there's seeds. Before the seeds reveal the true nature, very difficult to tell them apart. But Dhruva, this son of the non-favorite, neglected queen of the Son of God. He was the Son. He was a great devotee. Now one day, it starts, Ekada. Once upon a time, all good stories, but once upon a time, Suruchi Putram, the son of Suruchi. Who is the son of Suruchi? We haven't mentioned his name yet. His name was Uttam. Uttam. Uttam Arokya Varayan. That his father, Uttanapad, was sitting in the court on his throne. And once upon a time, Uttam, he sat on the lap of his father who was sitting on the throne, the king, and his father, Valayan, showing him so much affection and petting him. This was happening with Uttam. Antam Arokyam Lalayan. So a very, very sweet scene. The boy, his father, the king, and then Uttamam, the Rurukshan Tam, Yuva, when Dhruva naturally wanted to also get up on the lap of his father, because naturally he wanted to also receive some affection from his father, and his brother, Uttam, he was there, so he naturally tried to get up on his father's lap, but the king didn't welcome him. So, we think about this as a story in a holy book. But when something like this would happen to us, a deep feeling of rejection, for one reason or another, our whole life, our whole self-concept has changed. All those similar things can happen. Maybe we don't have an opportunity to want to sit on the lap of our father who's the king of the world. But our life has so many traumatic experiences, practically, especially in Kali Yuga, you practically can't go through life without some kind of difficulty or trauma. So difficult in Kali Yuga. When we hear about how Jumas, what happens to Jumas, how something very unfortunate, practically speaking, a traumatic experience for a young boy, a deep rejection, how he turned this around. How he turned it around. So this negative became the strongest of all positives. This is something that we should and can learn. We may not be able to perfectly, we cannot perfectly imitate Dhruva Maharaj, because we'll see, even not tomorrow, but tomorrow perhaps we'll hear what he was asked to do and what he actually did on the next day. It's incredible, the austerities that he performed. But here's the seed of the event happening right now. So he was unwelcome, Juba was unwelcome, as he tried to climb on the lap of his father. This is text 10 now. While the child, Juba Maharaj, was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, who was, what was his relationship? Stepmother. She became very envious. Panayam Dhruvam. Sapadni, which means with the stepmother. Suruchi, Srimhato Rajna. The king was right there. Dhruva was right there. Uttama was right there. And Suruchi became very upset. Now, what was the boy trying to do? What was he trying to do? Something very innocent. He wasn't even very thoughtful. He just wanted to climb on the lap of his father. But Tsuruchi became envious. She became proud. Because pride and envy are very deeply connected. Because envy, what does envy mean in a simple way? It's anger. Jealous, okay, what does it mean? What does it mean? Yeah, someone has something that you want, and you don't have it, but you don't want, and they have it, and that's intolerable. So, when someone that core compares envy to like a spear in the heart, and just imagine trying to be happy while walking around with a spear in your heart. It's just simply not possible, no matter what else you have. So one has a tendency to become envious of others. Meaning if one has a tendency to wish ill or bad for others, because they have something that you don't have, I mean, you're in a very difficult position in this material world because either you have to rid the world everyone who has something that you don't have, or you're going to suffer. So usually, we try to rid the world of everyone who has something that we don't have, but we don't succeed, so we suffer. Because this is the way the material world is made. It's made to point out our envy, because our ultimate envy comes from, because if we're envious of one person who has, well, you'll understand with my example where I'm going, who has more cows than us, he can play the flute better than us, and he's the most beautiful. He's so beautiful, and everyone loves him more than us. And he dresses, when he dresses, he knows just how to dress. You know what I'm speaking about? If you don't know, like you know already, the peacock fella, you know? Flute? Who am I speaking? Yes? That's where our envy begins. Krishna Bhule Seji. We want to forget Krishna. There's an enmity. And that other, Dr. Eva Maya Bhude. We have to cover up because we can't make Krishna not exist. Because if he didn't exist, nothing would exist. Because he's the basis of all existence, Mama Ankhakeja Sambhava. So instead we need our own universe, where we can imagine that we are the most, the ones who are most worthy, the most worthy of everyone's love and all opulence. This is called the world of Maya, or illusion, because we're not. We're tiny. We're insignificant. So Tsuruchi, she was proud. And that was the point I was attempting to make. There has to be a pride in the heart. I deserve, and this person does not. I deserve. There has to be pride. We have to think. In some way, the mood of competitor with Krishna which takes a lot of pride, because after all, each of us know better than anyone else that, like when Lakshmi Devi was born, how was she born? Churned of the ocean of milk when they were churning the demigods. She was born and she came out with a garland, and she was looking for a suitable husband. And everyone wanted to marry Lakshmi, but I will put it in the present continuous tense. Everyone wants to combine with good fortune. the goddess of fortune. This is our life, this is our existence, trying to arrange the universe so our life combines with good fortune. Everything goes our way, nothing bad happens, nothing ill happens to us. And again, the same point to be deserved. So Lakshmi went around with her garland, and everyone wanted her, and she said, no, this one has this fault, and this one has this fault, and that one has that fault, and that one has that fault. And she would not combine with anyone until she came to Lord Krishna, Lord Narayana. And then she said, oh, here is the appropriate person. So we think we're very appropriate, and that's pride, and because of the pride, we become envious. So Ruchi was envious of Dhruva. Now, why was she envious of Dhruva? Because this is the nature of the material world. We become envious. There's no cause, really. It's not an intellectual thing. Sometimes we can see this person has something specific that we want, like I want to be able to hold up a hill. And he can do it, I can. Who I happen to be pointing to over there. Not by chance, there is no chance. But even if there is no reason, the mind invents a reason, and it's the real reason is the deep dissatisfaction in our own heart with who we are, what we have. Because as long as we are on the material level, we're going to be dissatisfied. We have to be dissatisfied, like the fish has to be dissatisfied when he's out of water. So we keep making our plans and trying to combine the elements of the material energy so that fortune always favors us and misfortune never visits us. But we can find finally some deep satisfaction we are longing for, but we don't. We're looking in the wrong place. So Suchi somehow was envious of this little boy, Dhruva, her stepson. And with great pride, she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. Now, that's an example of what she's going to say right in front of the king. So she was very sure of her position. This is what she said. In her envious, just a little boy trying to get some affection from father. Queen Suruchi told Dhruva, my dear child, Vatsa, Navatsa, Nivipati. This word Vatsa, what does Vatsa mean? Sound, but it also means, oh, this is a very affectionate way. It's not used very much. If you say to your dear son, say, oh, my dear calf, everyone's going to think, or a puzzle or something. Actually, when you just even look at this picture, look at the relationship between the calf and mother there. There's so much love and affection. It's a very endearing term. It's not used very much nowadays. So she tells the Maharaj, Navasyan Ripati Vishnu. Bhavan Arobasun. Arati means deserve. You do not deserve to sit on the lap of your father on the throne. Surely, you are also the son of the king. The king is listening to this. He's not saying anything. And Dhruva is watching it and hearing it all. You do not deserve to sit on the lap of your father, the king. Your son, because you did not take your birth from my womb, In other words, being the son of the king is not enough qualification to sit on the throne. But you have the disqualification of taking your birth from the womb of someone else. And because of this, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap. It's a 5-year-old voice he's talking to. My dear child, Balak, you are unaware. And this is so amazing, because indeed, he was unaware. Because the nature of a joint family, I've spoken to some devotees who've grown up in joint families. They said until they were like 10 years old, they didn't know which one was their father, which one was their mother. There's so much love being exchanged. And everyone was showing loving affection. There was no short. Everyone, nowadays, people grow up, tend to grow up with a shortage of love. But there was this system, when it was working properly, there was so much affection. Your Ajuma wasn't aware of the difference between Suniki and Suruchi. You were unaware that you were not born out of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. And the father was sitting on the throne, but she was taking it in a very my son is going to be king. You can't touch this throne. You'll never sit on the throne. She was taking it in a far-reaching way in the kingship. You should know your attempt is doomed to failure. You're trying to fill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. Now listen to what she says here, because in this envious, nasty chastisement of Dhruva Maharaj, she's going to speak something true and wonderful. Gold sometimes is found in a filthy place. We might not recognize it, and indeed, Dhruva isn't going to recognize it at this point, but later he'll understand. She said, Suruchi said, Akash Aradhya Parusham. You have to perform austerity, tapasya. You want to sit on the throne? Is that what you want? Well, I'll tell you how you can do it. Tapasya Aradhya Parusham. You perform austerity to worship, to please the Brahma Purusha, the Supreme Lord, the Jiva. And then, by God's mercy, if you please Him, you give your desire. And then, if you do get your desire, He blesses you. If you please Him, if you perform the austerity, and you please Him, then Gave Tam Sadayas Manam. Yad Ichasti Nivasanam. If you want to fulfill your Icha, Yad Ichasti, your desire, Nivasanam, to sit on the Nipa Asana throne, King Seed, and Bhai Tam Sadyatmanam, that you have to. Love is the womb, your desire. After you please the Lord, that's not even enough. You perform your austerities and your compassion, you please the Lord, and you get His mercy, then die! Then die! And take your birth again in my womb. Then you can do it. Prabhupada's translation. If you all desire to rise to the throne of the King, that you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. And then, when you are favored by Him because of sex worship, you shall have to take your next birth from my womb. Die. So, what do you think of the way she spoke to her stepson? What do you think? To this little boy, what do you think? Impolite, yes. Impolite. Envy filled, nasty, pride was there. So of course, you wouldn't speak like that, but sometimes we speak like that. So, those were her words. Text 14. Now, this is Dhruva's reaction. Very simple and natural. Matu satya sadhruti vidha. He looked at his mother, and he heard the sharp words of his stepmother, in the words that translate vidha means pierced. Usually when we think of something piercing our heart, we think of a knife or a spear or something like a sharp metal instrument. But do we think of words having the capacity to pierce the heart? We don't think in that way, but actually words, harsh words, cruel words are more pointed, and they can pierce the heart, and not only pierce the heart, but remain in the heart longer than a spear even. Because a spear, you can pull out. Okay, terribly, terribly, terribly painful, maybe even fatal. But if it comes out, it's there, you can see it, you know what the problem is. And the sharp words pierce our heart, they sustain there our whole life. And we keep remembering them again and again and again and again and again and again for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And even they may even carry us to our next life. So Dhruva's heart was pierced by the sharp words of his mother. Asun Rusha Gando Hatoli Atahi. He became angry because he was a warrior. And that's one thing that we should understand about Dhruva. He was a warrior. He was a Kshatriya, Kshatriya. He had the spirit of a warrior. When a warrior gets pierced, his fighting spirit, his anger arises, and he wants revenge. Dhruva is not pierced by the sharp, harsh words of his mother. Envious words become angry. Ganga, like a snake being struck by a stick. And Dhruva began to breathe heavily. After a warrior prince began to breathe heavily. And when he saw that his father was silent, this was it's like having a wound and then someone putting salt on the wound. His father didn't protect. She had our father, as we would say, wrapped around her little finger. The king. She had so much control, under control, that she dared to speak like this in front of him to the boy, and his father remained silent. And Dhruva looked at his father. He looked at his father. He was angry, breathing heavily. His father did not protest. And Dhruva ran from the palace. And ran. Because when something difficult or bad happens to us, and it's out of our control, we go where we can find some shelter. Shelter, yes. And this very much is about what this pastime is about. It's about finding shelter. Again, you may not be in the situation where this particular type of a thing happens to us, but in difficulty, we need shelter. We long for shelter. And the way the material world is set up is that there must be difficulty. There must be. It is part of the material world. Where did Drew go for shelter? As a young boy, he naturally went to his mother, crying. Text 15. He was so upset and so much crying that he couldn't speak. He was so emotional and tears and breathing. And when he reached his mother, his lips were trembling. What type of emotion causes trembling of lips? And he was crying. Simultaneously angry and crying because he was helpless. And yet he actually expected his father to protect him. And he didn't. Deep trauma. He was crying grievously. He went to his mother, and immediately his mother, Suniti, lifted son onto her lap. He got a lap. He wanted his father's lap, but he got his mother's lap. While the palace, he couldn't speak. So she was saying, "What's wrong, Juba? What happened? What happened? What happened?" And he couldn't speak. He was so upset. And the palace residents, who heard the sharp words, the harsh words of Saruchi, they related it, told him everything, her everything, in detail. What does it mean to have a child? One of the things it means is whatever happens to them, you experience. But here I am, and then here I am, we know, the Bhagavad Gita says, who are we? Yes, and the soul has a body. It's not that the body has a soul. Yes. The soul has a body, and then there's a feeling. Everyone has the feeling, the experience of feeling I am, I exist. I am, this is who I am. So when we take that feeling of I am, and invest it in something, place it on something, it becomes mine. So, because this is my body, I have to extend the feeling of I am to the body, so therefore it is my body, and I have a watch. So it is my watch. I have a car. So it is my car. I have a house. So it is my house. I have a family. So it is my family. It's taking the sense of I and impressing it upon something that is actually not I. Because obviously, this watch is not mine. Oops, no, it's mine. I'm not going to. But this isn't me. Obviously, it's not me. Maybe it's not so obvious. Do I have a face? It has a face. It has two hands? I have two hands. Huh? It has three hands. But why do they call the second hand the second hand when it should be the third hand? You have date? Date? I don't have date. Anyway, clearly not me. But the sense of it, when I impress the sense of its me upon something that isn't me, it becomes mine. So we do that with the family and all the possessions. And what it means to be in the material world is to really expand the sense of what's mine. expanding the sense of me into what's mine, and expand and expand and expand until we think this is my country, and something bad happens to my country, like India or something, when it loses to Pakistan and cricket. I mean, how painful is that? What would happen if you tried to get your PR and they asked you, or your Australian citizenship or something, they asked you if India was playing Pakistani cricket, who would you root for? And they were going to write down, and if you said India, they wouldn't give it to you. Great internal pressure. But easy, of course, India, what is the problem? But that is the sense, the impression of planting the sense of me upon something that isn't actually me. So, Suniti also became greatly aggrieved, very distressed, because Dhruva's distress was so great. This incident was unbearable. She could not tolerate it. She began to burn as if she was in a forest fire. What an example! How much pain does being in a forest fire cause one? Unlimited pain, practically speaking. And Suniti experienced that. And in her grief, she became just like a burnt leaf. And she lamented. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her brain looked like a face filled with tears. And she began to speak to Dhruva. Now there's 7 verses that describe the words of Suniti to Dhruva. Here's the first word, very valuable instructions for us. When something horrible happens to us or to someone we love, listen to what Suniti said. She is going to act as Dhruva's guru. She's going to instruct him so wisely, pointing in the proper direction, that ultimately he achieves perfection. Listen to what she said. She was also breathing heavily. She had taken on the same symptoms position as her son. And she did not know the factual remedy. She did not know the cure of the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son, don't wish for any inauspicious for others. She has spoken so terribly to you, but don't wish anything of inauspiciousness for others." Why? Because anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. Now, anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. What did you see? Right here. If you can say it. Well, I'm saying that word almost. I'll read it again. Are you scared?
Is it action to reaction?
Yes, but the exact words. Please listen. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain. Now listen to this. In the previous verse, Suniti, hearing what happened to her son Dhruva, the pain she felt was unbearable. She began to burn as if in a Then she became like a burnt leaf and so lamented. Now take that. Don't wish for anything inauspicious for others, because anyone who inflicts pain upon others keeps himself from that pain. What was the pain that Tanithi felt? Experience. Don't say it yet. What was the pain that Tanithi was experiencing? By being burnt in a forest fire. And how did Tsurushi die? In a forest fire. This point is very heavy. Note it. Don't wish for others anything inauspicious. Anything. Even that they hurt their fingernail. Don't wish inauspiciousness for anyone else, okay? Because you'll have to suffer that same pain, even if it's selfish reason. Don't do it. Only wish good for others. That's what it means to be a devotee. That is our first instruction. Second verse. Text 18. Satyam. It is true. Sarusha Vitam Bhavam Ne. It is true. It is true what Saruchi has said. Because your father, the king, she said, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He neglects me. He feels ashamed to be with me. Therefore, it is a fact. You can't become the king. My relationship with your father is poor. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman. And being fed from her breast by that milk, you have grown up. But my dear boy, he started by saying something that is true. But this isn't all that is true. Keep going. Sunithi is going to capture the essence of the good, of the truth, even spoken by Sarikya in a harsh way. Whatever has been spoken, Atishta, you do that. What she has said to you, Atishta, Tata. Tata is another very affectionate way of addressing someone. My dear son, Atishta, just execute that, my dear son. Vimatsara, without being envious. You execute what your stepmother has said. Uktam samatthapi yad avyalikam. And what was that you should do? And this is the essence or the beginning of the good advice. Sometimes the best advice comes to us in the most unexpected way. And we should learn to recognize it, especially if it's pointed out to us, to take it and then act on it. Aradda Adhokshita. What does that mean? Aradda? You worship and please Adhokshita, the transcendental Lord, his Padapadma, his lotus feet. And Yadhi should say, and Yadi, if he should say, if you desire to sit on the throne, listen to what she said, it's very interesting. If you desire, Yadi Ichichi, if you desire Adi Apsana, to also sit on the throne with Uttama Yata. If you desire to also sit on the throne, not get rid of him so you can sit there, But if you also, because that would have been very envious, and she wasn't envious, if you also desire to sit on the throne with your Bhagavad Uttama, you should do as your sutta has said and worship the Lord Hoshidhe, the Lord's feet of the Lord. Prabhupada's translation. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Sarutri, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. It's true. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepmother Uttama, then give up your envious attitude. Very interesting. What Sarutri had called envious, and now, Dhruva said, because envy is like a disease, born of pride. And if someone acts enviously towards us, born out of their pride, there's such a tendency to react enviously, born out of my pride. How dare you speak to me like this? Don't you know who I am? We don't maybe say it out loud, but we react like that. Become very, very upset. So give up your envious attitude. She didn't say she should give up her envious attitude. She said you should give up your envious attitude. And immediately try to execute the instruction of your stepmother to worship the lotus feet of the transcendental Lord. Therefore, without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshiping the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Listen to Prabhupada's purport here. Short. Listen carefully. I'm going to ask you, it's only very, very short, but I'm going to ask you what you remember. So listen. The harsh words used by Sarutri to her stepson were true. Because unless one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve any success in life. Man proposes, and God proposes. Samiti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, agreed with the co-wife's advice that Dhruva engage himself in the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indirectly, the words of Sarutri were a benediction for Dhruva Maharaj, for because of the influence of the stepmother's words, he became a great devotee. So sometimes the impetus to push forward in devotional life or in any to find success may come in a very, very unexpected way. And one should really learn this art as Dhruva Maharaj is learning it, and of course he has some special qualities that we should also learn from Dhruva Maharaj, how he executes that, and we shall hear more about those tomorrow. So, one of the arts of life is how to turn a difficult situation into a positive situation. And it all has to do with this is the foundational principle in doing that. The foundational principle in turning a negative into a positive is just this. It is surrender and taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Now, in the next two verses, Sunniti is going to explain two examples of how Dhruva's family members, Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu, achieved the great success that they achieved. Brahma, of course, is Dhruva's not father, because Dhruva's father was? Who is Dhruva's father? Was it Vitalabha? Uttanapad with his father, and Uttanapad's father was Swayambhuvamanu, and Swayambhuvamanu's father was Uttanapad. So your great grandfather, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so great. A great person can do great things. The greatest person can do the greatest things. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create the universe. Now that takes the greatest person to give you that benediction that you achieve those qualifications. Although he is unborn, Brahma is unborn, and the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air. So he's the most worshipable of the yogis. Now take a moment. Okay, what did that verse say in essence? Raise your hand if you remember what that verse said in essence. Don't say anything, just raise your hand. I just want to see how terrible a teacher I am. Okay, we have to read this one again. Please listen. I'm going to ask that same question. Didn't follow through on the last one, but this time I'm going to do it. I want to hear the essence of what this verse was. Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, the great grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create this universe. Although he's unborn and the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air. In essence, what did the verse say? Spoken by Saliki. Raise your hand. Okay. Who would like to say what it says? Vote? Raise your hand. Yes. Anyone want to add anything? Yes?
Akam sarvakam moksha.
What? Not the purport, just the verse. What does the verse say?
It talks about whatever your desires are, is to surrender to the Supreme Lord.
Yes, purport. What does the verse say?
Everything comes from
that. That's purport. What does the verse say? Oh, excuse me. Did it say everything comes? Even the great yogi knows. What does the verse specifically say?
It's a good way to.
That's what I said. Okay. What does the verse say? I'll have to say one more time. You said it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, his great grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualification to create the universe. We'll break it down into smaller pieces. What did I just read? Yes. Yes. That. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that. Go to speech. Lord Brahma. Qualification to create the entire universe. Very good. Finally, everyone. Otherwise, I was telling this test very badly. Although he is unborn, Brahma is unborn, and is the chief of the living creatures, still, he's so unique and so powerful, but still he achieves his unique position because of the mercy of the Supreme Lord.
He's trying to convince Dhruva that if you want something, you should look in the right place for that thing. There's no use looking in the garbage for jewels. I mean, there's a chance that there may be some there, but it's very unlikely. Don't look there. Look in the right place for the right thing. If you want the ability to gain something wonderful, do go to the Supreme Lord, the greatest. Look how powerful he is. He gave Brahma the power to create the universe. And even the greatest yogis who have no material desires still, they get what they want from him. And therefore they worship. He's the worshipable Lord of everyone, whether you're a Kamasa or Kamasa, most of the Kamasa. So Prabhupada says in his purpose to become successful in any attempt. Now we all have so many desires in our heart. We want this, we want that. Sometimes we have very strong emotional desires. Sometimes those are mixed with other desires for achievement and gaining things in this world for ourselves or family members. And sometimes we're in great distress. We become moksha kami. What does that mean? You just want to get free from the pain. Never mind serving Krishna, I just can't tolerate the pain anymore. Perhaps we go through all three sometimes of those. But it doesn't make a difference on one level. Whatever our desires are, we should go to the same place to have those desires fulfilled. So that's what Prabhupada said in the purport. To become successful in any attempt, one not only has to undergo severe penance and austerity, work hard, but also one must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now why does Prabhupada say one must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? We see so many people who are successful who don't care a fig for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how does that so is Prabhupada's statement true or false? He says one must also be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What do you think about that? You ask, you can take, you can do an opinion poll on the street, in Swanson Street, and ask the people, are you dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And you, one, no. Maybe you're a bit of a pious person and will say yes. But what? Is Prabhupada speaking something true or not true? No idea. Well, how is it true? Okay. Bhakti Shastri. Yes, yes. Because if you ask everyone who wants to be a billionaire to raise your hand, then everyone raises their hand. Of course, not here. Here we ask everyone, the people who want to be billionaires, they only want it for the service of Radha Balabha. Actually, when I first began chanting, we had heard that Prabhupada had said that yogis can produce gold. They know how to produce gold. So Rupanuga Prabhu, he thought, oh, how nice it would be to have a golden altar. What do you think about that? It would be nice, yeah? Yeah. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, Prabhupada, could you please tell me, you see that yogis know how to produce gold, so please tell me how to produce gold so that you can produce gold and have a golden altar for the deity. The Prabhupada replied by saying, yes, there's a yogic system for doing this. First, you have to eat mercury. And of course, mercury will kill you. So you have to be a yogi. And then there is a way of past urine, after you ingest the mercury, there's gold metal, the astagata, the metal that they make cells out of, and you pass urine on that. The yogi does that, and that turns into gold. This will process it. But he said, well, don't try it. And then he said, but anyway, the tendency is when we get gold, is that we forget about Krishna. So don't try. Just be happy with Krishna. And yet, if one wants any success, unless it is sanctioned by Krishna, because the proportion of people who want to be very, very wealthy and the persons who are very, very wealthy is not based on desire and work alone. There is an additional element. Upadrapta anamanta. Krishna is the permitted. If he doesn't sanction, it doesn't happen no matter what. You can have a disease and take medicine, and unless the sanction is there, the medicine doesn't cure your disease. So what's the real cure of the disease? Is it the medicine or the sanction of the Lord? Don't do the sanction of the Lord. So therefore Prabhupada said, one must be dependent on the mercy of the personality of Godhead. The devotees are satisfied, happy, or secure in being dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what he chooses to give me. And the non-devotees, they are not. They don't want to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be dependent on his mercy. So we usually think, oh yeah, the non-devotees are like that, but then if we think about, am I actually satisfied with what Krishna gives me, or am I, is my heart a big storehouse of other desires, and I'm afraid that Krishna is not going to give me what I want unless something or another, not quite trusting Krishna? So we have to have a talk with ourselves sometimes and find out where we stand. Someone also must be dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This indication has been given to Dhruva Maharaj by his stepmother, and now it was confirmed by his own mother, Sunita. First example was Lord Brahma. Second example, he said, Manu achieved the power to create, and Manu achieved unlimited opulences. So Dhruva wanted, he didn't want to create a universe at this point. He was a warrior. His stepmother said, you cannot sit on the throne. And he was so angry. Oh yeah, I can't sit on the throne. Trembling, so angry. So Manu, greatest material wealth. Unlimited material wealth also by the mercy. It's impossible to obtain what he obtained by worshiping demigods. Many achieved liberation also by his mind. So here, then he continues, which is, you know, a very wonderful verse, and you're all sitting so. Even though so warm, and even though speaking so warm, you're all listening to me. Then she says, but so this is the 22nd verse, and then there's the 23rd verse, and then we all know that there's the 24th verse. Even without our computers and calculators and mobile phones, we know that. But she said, So little about the 24, we're already up to 22. She said, now she's giving her direct instruction, which is going to shift, or rather, she's going to give the instruction to Dhruva Maharaj that is going to shift his anger and his feeling of misfortune to give it a proper direction, a proper channel. So she says, my dear boy, you also should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Take shelter of the Lord, who is very kind to his devotees. From Eva Vatsa, Vatsa Asraya, my dear Vatsa, Eva, certainly, my dear Vatsa, you should certainly break your Vatsaram. Vatsa Asraya, Asraya, you should take shelter of this Lord who is Vatsa Vatsaram. She called him Vatsa and said, the Lord is Vatsa Vatsaram. He gives shelter to his Vatsa. We all know that Krishna loves his Vatsa so much. He loves his calves so much. So you become, my dear Vatsa, you come to me for shelter because I am your mother, but you go to Vatsa Vatsa, Vatsa Vatsa. You be his calf and take shelter from of him. Vicharya Vishva, that he is so powerful that everyone in the universe is worshipping his Lord's feet. So requiring the qualification. Vidyavata Mamukshati Mriga Padabja Padati. This is the process. You take shelter of his loaded feet. Think about what you desire. Do you want that? Well, if you do want that, if you do desire it, there is one place in it, he says, that is so great and so wonderful, that if we go back to that place, everyone desires to be satisfied. And we don't, and it's not that Krishna's lotus feet are small and we have to push others away so we can get our place as calves. No, they are great, they are wonderful. Although the Supreme, you should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. He loves his devotees. Person seeking liberation. There is one verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion that says that Krishna, he doesn't take offense. Even if we act offensively to him, he actually doesn't take offense. And even if we offer something small to him, he sees it as very great. And when his enemies approach him with enmity, he doesn't act with enmity towards them. Samvadaram Sharanam Brahma. What a wonderful Lord. This is the one we want to take shelter of. Person seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death, they always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate. Please listen carefully to these instructions, because it is the nature of every living entity, every soul, to have desires.
the way to stop desiring is not to exist. There's no other way. Even if we think, oh, I'm tired of all these desires harassing me, now I'm going to desire not to have any desires. It's still a desire. We must desire. If we want our desires fulfilled, just be purified. Because without being purified, becoming amal, free from contamination, we won't be able to do the next step. And that next step is place the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart. He is very kind to you. Take shelter of him. Place his lotus feet. Situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead within your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. The same universe is yours. Now, I'll read, before reading Prabhupada's purport, I'd like to read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because it will tell you here that Vishwanath states that I found difficult to understand, but the Prabhupada explains it clearly in his own purport. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in Prabhupada. We can see very much imbibed the mood of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport. Because what was the first thing that she told him? You take shelter of the Lord because
he is so great and very kind.
To his devotees, he's Bhutya Vatsal. But he means to those who seek his protection. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the Lord is affectionate to his servant. He will have, because Dhruva has come to him as his shelter. He's come to her, his mother, naturally as his shelter. And she said, you go to him, he will have more affection for you. And who in this world has more affection for us? You know, now in crazy Kali Yuga, it doesn't always work this way. But who will have more affection for you, his servant? He will have more affection for you, his servant, than the affection of millions of mothers like me. This is what she said. You go to him. You come to me. We go to shelter, that we know we're going to be deceived. Which they won't turn us away, like the Rishi turned Dhruva away, like the king, by his not say anything, turned Dhruva away. We go for shelter where we will be taken and accepted and given shelter. So we go. Dhruva went to his mother, but she's saying, you become his servant. Because his affection for his servants is greater than millions of mothers. Millions of mothers like you. You will not encounter a trace, the smallest element of suffering. You will take shelter of the Lord. And that is the path of the Lord whose lotus feet are sought after by everyone who is aspiring, who desires liberation. But it is not easy to attain. But take that shelter. Take that shelter. And having taken it,
you should take his lotus feet and place them in your mind, which has attachment for nothing else. Worship the Lord, placing him in the purified mind by bhakti. And then Bhakti Vishwanath says, so fix your, the Lord's lotus feet in your, purify your heart, and fix his feet in your heart by service. Without anything else being fixed in your heart. We may do so many things, but what is actually in our heart? What do we actually desire? What is our mind actually focused on? He said, because of the Lord's greatness, his power, and his kindness, more kind than millions and millions of mothers. You worship him. Keep those feet undeviatingly, fully, with no other attack. Keep them in your heart by bhakti. And that is the only way to do it. By devotion, by love. Love and service. Save them. Why did Dhruva run to his mother?
Because of love.
Then Vishwanath said, you should do this. Since a 5-year-old boy is not qualified for karma yoga, you cannot perform karma yoga, so you should do this in bhakti yoga. So when I read that, I was thinking, well, bhakti yoga is higher than karma yoga, and if he's not qualified for something inferior, then how will he be able to do something superior? But Gopal will explain this in his purport, which we shall read. And if I don't, the only way I can read it quickly, not quickly, but without going back and reading it 5 times or 6 times, because I'm not sure anyone heard anything, is if you all please, even though it's, I know it's late and everything, but if you all please try to listen, it's very sweet. The system of bhakti yoga described by Queen Samiti to her son is the standard way of self-realization. Everyone can continue in his constitutional occupational duties and at the same time keep the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. This was also instructed by the Lord himself to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, go on fighting, but keep me within your mind. Anyone know the Sanskrit of that? Mam anusmara yudhyacha. This should be the motto. What does motto mean? The simple saying that we keep saying over again that drives us, that drives our life in that sense. This should be the motto of every honest man and lady. What was that? Should be the motto? Mam anusmara. Remember Krishna. Do your duty and remember Krishna. She said, Queen Suniti, this should be the motto of every honest person who seeks perfection in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada didn't say, this should be the motto of some honest people who seek perfection in Krishna consciousness. Or, he said, every. In this connection, Queen Suniti advised her son that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhaktivatsa, which indicates that he is very kind to his devotees. She said, you came to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother. But I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him and the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealing. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help his devotees. Queen Suniti also stressed that the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but it is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated in her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible. He was only a small child of 10 years old. And it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of Karma Kanda, but by the process of Bhakti Yoga. Even a child of less than 11 years old, or anyone of any age, can be purified. That is the special significance of Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, she advised them not to accept the worship of any demigod or any other process, but simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essence of bhakti, and Dhruva will teach us this very soon, following the instruction of Sarupshi, who said it in sarcasm, and Suniti, who said it with bhakti. And Narada Muni will give us the practical shape, the instructions of the practical shape, so we'll know how to do it. Simply take to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't worship the demigod. Don't follow any prophet. Surrender. Give yourself. Become his vatsa. And the result would be all perfection. Because as soon as one places the Supreme Personality of Godhead within one's heart, everything becomes easy and successful. What do you think of that purple? What do you think? What do you think?
I think one should give up himself to the Supreme God. Godhead.
You heard it very carefully. Thank you. What did you think? What did you think of the purport?
If you have unflinching faith on Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I did notice that word. Yes.
So, all our desires could be fulfilled, and it will be fulfilled in such a way that we don't have to do it again. It will be finishing forever. So then we can go back.
Then she said, yes, let me pardon you, but I'm going to. What happens if we don't have unflinching faith? What should we do? What happens if we'd like to have unflinching faith, but we don't quite have it yet? This question we have to know the answer to for ourselves. We have to learn the answer. What should I do? I may not be on the level where I can fully surrender myself. What should I do? But the answer, of course, is in the verse that you quoted before. Akamasava Kamava. Most of them are Jaladi, the great Bhakti Yogini, the great Bhakti Yogini. And I haven't. also. And you should worship Krishna. Don't look anywhere else. You may be a kama, I mean having no devotional, no material desires, only devotional desires. You may be sattva kama. My heart is like the dumping ground of all material desires. One of the movies and watch television, explore the internet continuously, and I go shopping all the time and whatever, and so many desires. My mind is like a funnel. And it all comes into my mind. It could be like that, or it could be pure, or it could be moksha kamis, udharadi. It could be moksha kamis, it's just want to get out of this miserable material world. So painful. And I've seen this one die and this one get sick. And I've seen wars and I've seen this person get crushed by this problem and that by that. I don't have anything to do with it. I just want to be free from it. But whatever our situation is, to vena bhakti yogena, yajeta. Rupa Maharaj is practically, Rupa Maharaj's pastime, the story is like a purport of that verse. Because he was so Tivrena. Oh, what does Tivrena mean? Huh? Intent. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that word, but that's better than what I was thinking of. Intense surrender, focus, intense, powerful worship of Krishna. And he was sattva kama like anything. He had so many desires for it. But if the example is given us in Ganga, maybe I'll speak about the verse tomorrow. Tivrena means the Ganga at Gomukh, Gangotri. You've seen the Ganga at Gomukh and Gangotri. I didn't see it when I was there. You did? In Gomukh, it's cold, yes? Yeah? It's so cold, the water of the Ganga is so cold in Gomukh, you don't know whether it's cold or hot. But you know you want to get out. And there are huge, huge icebergs in the water. It's very cold, in fact. So worship Krishna, whatever our situation is, just do it. Because Dhruva did it, because Manu did it, because Brahma did it, because Prabhupada did it, because so many nice devotees did it, so many, and Rupa Goswami did it, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did it. Well, I don't trust anyone, I only trust myself. The problem is like that, because if we only trust ourselves, and since we know better than anyone else how untrustworthy we are, as the saying goes, even when if a doctor treats himself, he is a fool for a patient. You know that saying? The doctor prescribes for himself, he is a fool for a patient. You know that thing? You never heard of it before. In other words, we know better than anyone else how untrustworthy we are, and how devious our minds are, how tricky, and how unreliable, and capable of any crazy thing, and yet we say we trust ourselves and don't trust anyone else. And then there, on the other hand, there is Srila Rupa Goswami. On the other hand, there is who was, and Raghunath Das Goswami, who was wealthy practically beyond our estimation at this point. He was just begging, trying attain the lotus feet, giving up everything to attain the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and eventually did it by the mercy of Nityananda. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate, what does mitigate mean? Reduce or remove your distress. I don't find anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like a lotus petal. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the face, the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune, but the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. One more verse. You won't be so fortunate, and that's very wonderful. So that's what she told Dhruva. And then Dhruva, this is my ceremony speaking, evam sanjal become matur. Thus, after hearing a karnya artha agama vacha, after hearing these purposeful words from his mother, after hearing these very, very pointed and purposeful words from his mother that they exchanged and spoke together, saniyam yat manatmanam, that saniyamya, he was very upset, but he began to place his mind fully under control. And he walked right out of his father's house. He let me go across that step. Both the mother and the son were lamenting Dhruva Maharaj's having been insulted by his stepmother and his father not having taken any steps on this issue. But mere lamentation is useless. One should find out the means to mitigate one's lamentation. Thus both mother and son decided to take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, because that is the only solution to material problems. It is indicated in this connection that Dhruva Maharaj left his father's capital city to go to a secluded place to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Dhruva said, well, where can I find him? You say I should take shelter of the Lord, where can I find him? My dear son, when great sages want to find the Lord, they usually go to the forest. So Dhruva left his father's capital city to go to a secluded place to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here's the instruction of Prahlad Maharaj also, that if one is seeking peace of mind, he should free himself from all contamination of family life and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by going to the forest. For the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this forest is the forest of Vrindavan. And if one takes shelter of Vrindavan, unto Vrindavan, could be all the problems of his life are solved very easily. So Dhruva, he heard the instructions, and amazingly enough, he acted on them. Immediately. But he didn't know anything about the Lord. He was only a little boy. What's going to happen to him in the forest? Will a tiger eat him? Or maybe an elephant will step on him? Or poisonous snake, like a
what will happen to this unprotected little boy when he goes to the palace? To find Krishna, to find God. What will happen? You shall hear the next episode, the next part. Thank you very much. All of you very, very carefully. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Do we know who Dhru Maharaj was in his previous life? Did he manage to perform this powerful austerity in the age of fast?
Some of us knew, but some of us, the same of us who knew, forgot. Unfortunately. I remember a little bit. He was a powerful Brahmana. But he had a friend who was a king who had lots of opulences and he was poor. And he started, you know, I thought this of myself that, because when I was young, I could run and run, never get tired, especially 10 kilometers, 15 kilometers. I could run and run, and now I could barely walk. So when you get older and you start looking at the young boys, they're running and running and running. And you start thinking, oh, I remember when I could run. Oh, and then the next thought is, only if I could run fast again. Oh, it'd be so nice to be able to run. And immediately the seed of that desire to be able to run again is planted in the heart. So Krishna said, oh, you want to be able to run again like a little boy, a young boy? Okay. Okay, we can arrange that. What size legs would you like? What size feet would you like? We're taking orders right now. And that's one typical thing that happens, that we lose when we're old to what we had when we're young. Only if I could have hair again. Or this time I would like blonde hair or something like that. Or, you know, long hair. I never can grow my hair long. Oh. And then the other thing that happens is, start thinking of all the things that you didn't have that others had and you wished you had. The ability to play harmonium, to sing, to dance, to be wealthy, to have this, to have that, to have two houses, seven cars, a Mercedes, a Rolls Royce, followers, this, that. Whatever it is that we think that we didn't have, that we thought that others have, that we imagine made them happy, those desires come to the heart too. Those seeds for our next birth. So Dhruva Maharaj in his last life was a Brahmana. Somehow by association, being friends with a king's son, he wanted material happiness, and he was born in a king's family. But he was carrying some pointedness of ability and focus. And of course, this was a long time ago when people weren't so disturbed in mind. When everyone in Kali Yuga is upadutaha, everyone's mind is flickering and flickering and disturbed by all the speculation. That we've grown to accept of life and advancement. There's a sage in China, in Cantonese is called Hongfuchi, which means Confucius. And Confucius was like a Brahmin sage who was always looking for a king to advise, who would accept his advice how to rule the kingdom. He was brilliant. And he said that if I was advising a king who would listen to me, people would be so satisfied
that people would be living in a village and they would be able to hear the sound of the dogs barking in the village next to them, that they would have never even have bothered to visit. So he said this, that people would be so satisfied in their village they wouldn't even need or desire to walk anywhere else. But who would be satisfied like that today? They would think, oh, this poor person, he's never been outside of his village. He doesn't have a car, he's never even been to the big city, he doesn't even have a mobile phone maybe, you know, or the internet, or, I mean, how primitive, how unfortunate. It means our heart is becoming more consciousness, because more and more ripe for seeing all the things we don't have and we want, and our mind is always disturbed thinking about all the things we want. Only if I had that, if only I had that, if only if I had that. So that's how we put in the seeds in our consciousness for our next birth. What is it that I didn't have in this life that I think that if I had it, I'd be happy? What is it that I wish that I had at one point that didn't lose and wish I hadn't lost? Well, Krishna still comes. Or give him to us if that's what we want. He's going to give Dhruva a kingdom. So everything is based on our desire. So what is it that we want? Something to think about. What is it that I actually want? How about a credit card? That instead of spending money, whenever I spent money, they sent the bill to my enemies. He was the one responsible. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Any other questions or comments? Yes.
He said an honest person.
There was a second part of that sentence that I didn't emphasize much. Every honest person who's a devotee, basically. This should be the motto of every honest person who seeks perfection in Krishna consciousness. So if we said to Prabhupada, what about the honest people who don't seek perfection in Krishna consciousness? What would Prabhupada say? I heard someone say it back there. What would he say?
They are rascals.
They are rascals. Yes. They are rascals. They are not honest. They are rascals. They are rascals. Yes?
You would say that?
You would definitely say they are rascals. You said immediately we divide them into two categories. If they are devotees, and if they're not devotees, they are rascals. Immediately, there are only two categories. But Prabhupada, how about somebody who's somewhere in between? They are rascals. Yes, Prabhupada.
You are a rascal.
Yes, Prabhupada. Because we think we're the proprietors of so many things, but are we actually the proprietors of it? Say if I think I'm the proprietor of, you already put your MP3 player, but if I think that I'm the proprietor of your MP3 player, but then I try to leave with it, I cannot. So when we try to take all the things that we think we're the proprietor of when we leave this world, we have to leave everything behind, which indicates that it actually has nothing to do with us. We're not the owner of it, not the proprietor of it.
so therefore we're thinking that something is mine that isn't mine, so it's dishonesty. It's amazing if you think about it, and confronting if you think about, if you define what is actually yours by what you can take with you when you die, and then take that conception of what's yours and compare it to what you usually think is yours. Compare that if you want to become humble. So that means we're dishonest and restless. So therefore, there to properly place the Lord in the heart, as Suniti said in Prabhupada Bhattacharya, that we have to become very detached from these things in the material world. We need to hear a lot. We have to understand what is really ours, you know, what is worthwhile. What do we think if we had in this world we would be happy? Possessing it. Being able to hold it for some time and think it's mine. Because we know it. We're not going to be able to hold it forever. So what is it that we think that if I could hold it for some time, then I'll be happy and satisfied. So to confront these things in an honest way with knowledge of right, what's of some philosophical knowledge, means that we'll take shelter of the Supreme Lord. And especially when we confront the disparity, the difference between what we should be and what we are, then we'll take shelter of the Lord, because he accepts even a little service. Patam pushtam palam toyam. Singular, a little slower. That's why we want to take shelter of him too, because if he's just going to be fair and give us what we deserve, then we'll look for another Lord. Because I prefer not to get what I deserve personally. We need someone who's going to reciprocate with great affection, who's more kind than millions of mothers, who's bhava-grahi janardana. What does bhava-grahi janardana mean? Essence of what? Of what? Of the essence of the mood that you're making the offering in. Despite everything else, not that we should allow ourselves to be sloppy in our devotional service and not sincere, because that won't work either, because he's also very expert at, he's in the heart, he knows exactly what we're up to, what our plan is, what our scheme is. So then he'll reciprocate. So, but we should try to offer something sincerely. Try to sincerely do some service to him. Please accept it. It will be your kindness to me if you accept this offering. See me as your vatsa. Any question or comment? Later? Another question, perhaps? Are you hungry yet? No. Any other questions or comments?
You're talking about how when somebody is in distress, they're looking for shelter. And you're talking about how, because of the virus, and that Krishna is giving so much
Vishnu Saptamati Thakura and Srinivasa Prabhupada, they commented, expanded the mood of Suniti's words in that way.
So recently I was a bit distressed, so I asked my parents to,
yes.
uh, And you're just saying that Srila Prabhupada said that people who are not devotees are rascals. So I was thinking even then, I'm speaking to rascals, but all the same, I need somebody to talk me through what I'm going through. So how can we really take shelter of Krishna from when we may need to actually talk with someone who, like you were saying, can definitely won't judge us, like parents but usually just accept if you bring them, they will talk to you and help you. And also, even though they may be rascals, they may be materially experienced, so they can actually help you in a material sense, like organize yourself or plan things to solve the problem. So maybe you can come on.
The point that I noted was in the question was that sometimes you have a practical situation and you want a practical answer, and you might pray and you might search just for backwards and forwards for some kind of a direction, but your mind is confused, and where do you get that answer from? And generally speaking,
But I wasn't so practical, I was distressed, there were fears, it wasn't a matter of I'll go to the temple and pray, it was a matter of I need someone to help me now, I can't wait 6 months or what period, I have to speak with somebody now to calm me down.
Speak with somebody.
Yeah, and give you some
Yes. In other words, a prayer appears to be passive. When you're distressed, you want someone to speak with, is that right?
Yeah, and give advice and yeah. Mm.
Back to you. Because I've experienced that also.
Would you accept everything your mother said, regardless of what she said?
No.
Okay, so you're not fully taking shelter of her. Yes? If she said your problem and you wouldn't be in so much distress, if she was really a rascal, if she would have told you so many things that would have been completely against the things that you hold dearest in your life. And the things that you value most in your life. So she wasn't a complete rascal, obviously, but she's just not an exalted devotee. So first of all, I say how wonderful it is if our parents are actually devotees, how fortunate we are if our parents are actually devotees. So then we move to this question. We need someone to take shelter of. So when you're talking to your mother, but you're not taking shelter of her because you're not accepting everything that she's going to be saying, you have a different standard, right? So who is really your shelter when you're talking to your mother?
So
your own standard, which is a devotional standard, it comes from Guru, Prabhupada, Krishna, like that. So it's not that you're actually taking shelter of her. So we do have to be careful of these kind of things in the sense of we should know really where our shelter is. So where really is your shelter? Not that you have to don't answer that right now. So we want to make our shelter so deep. So deep in Krishna that we can turn to him at any time and he'll respond. Sadami Buriyogam Sa Lina Mamma Bianca Te. But what's the line right before that? Kesham Sakatam. What does Sakatam mean? Always yuktanam. Wait, yuktanam. Yes, so if we always take shelter of Krishna devotional service and bhajatam, worship him with pretty purpakam, with great loving devotion, then didami buriyolam tam. So when not maybe on the highest level yet, but we should know that that highest level is indeed the ultimate standard. But we don't find any other shelter except for Krishna. Whether they're rascals or non-rascals, we turn only to Krishna. The issue isn't the demigods are not rascals, they're devotees. But still, the injunction is not to take shelter of the demigods when you have needs. So the issue isn't rascal or non-rascal, the issue is, where is my shelter really? And this is a big topic, and it's too late to talk about it. It may come up tomorrow or the next day. This is the issue of Krishna consciousness. The primary issue is to make our shelter fully, irrevocably, and only at Krishna's lotus feet. That's what we want to do. And then the practical things, you know, if we're hungry, or if we don't just pray to Krishna, you know, you go out and plant a few seeds and wait for them to grow, and you know, if something grows, you know, like that, and then also you act practically, you do something. But inside, the theoretical, philosophical, spiritual, emotional basis is essence is on Krishna. And then practically you act, practically. You don't move your essence. You didn't move your essence. You didn't fully take shelter. Because you've already given yourself to Krishna. That's the reality. You've already given yourself. Is that all right, or are you? Okay. 1 o'clock. What time is the sun? So the first question is, because we have an hour to think about life. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day.